It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. Broadcasting from beautiful post-Crab Fest Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 50 degrees. We're looking for a little rain today, mainly before 1. Mostly cloudy skies today with a high about 51. So we're almost there. South winds about 15, gusting as high as 20. For tonight, rain's likely mainly after 7. Cloudy skies tonight with a low around 45. East winds to 10 miles per hour. Coming up on the Midday Report, electric vehicle charges along the rail belt by 2020. A dramatic National Guard rescue of 2 New York pilots. And a remembrance of a longtime Southeast Alaskan Native leader. That and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Joe Biden is paying tribute this hour to the victims of the Tulsa Race Massacre on this 100th anniversary of the violence in the community of Greenwood. He's the first sitting president to visit the site of the deadly 1921 attack when a mob of angry white residents destroyed a successful black neighborhood and killed as many as 300 African-American residents. NPR's Scott Detrow reports.
The attack is one of the largest and most brutal episodes of racial violence in American history, but for decades it was mostly ignored or forgotten. The Tulsa Massacre has gotten renewed attention in recent years. In a proclamation, Biden, quote, called on the American people to reflect on the deep roots of racial terror in our nation and recommit to the work of rooting out systemic racism in our country. Biden will meet with remaining survivors. He's also announcing new steps to try and narrow the racial wealth gap in the country, including committing to award more federal contracts to small disadvantaged businesses. Scott Detrow, NPR News, Washington.
A state-sanctioned report finds that the Virginia Military Institute must be held accountable for enabling a culture of racism and sexism. An investigation finds the nation's oldest public senior military college has failed to adequately address cases of sexual assault. It also found a disproportionate number of cadets of color dismissed by the school's student-run honor court. Democratic Governor Ralph Northam was among those who ordered the probe after the Washington Post reported on racism at VMI. Texas Governor Greg Abbott plans to call state lawmakers back in for a special session to pass a voting bill considered to be one of the most restrictive in this country. From Houston Public Media, Andrew Schneider reports the move follows a walkout by Democrats that stalled the legislation.
Governor Abbott had declared election integrity as one of his top priorities for the 140-day legislative session that ended Monday. So he was furious when Democrats blocked the elections bill by walking out of the Texas House en masse, which prevented a vote because not enough members were present. The bill would limit voting hours, ban drive-through voting, prohibit local officials from sending out mail-in ballot applications without a request, and greatly empower partisan poll watchers. Abbott already planned to call a special session to deal with redistricting. It's not yet clear whether he will call a separate session to move the elections bill. For NPR News, I'm Andrew Schneider in Houston.
On the first day of Pride Month, celebrating the LGBTQ community, Florida has become the latest state to ban transgender girls and women from taking part in school sports. Republican Governor Ron DeSantis signed the bill at an event held at a Christian school in Jacksonville. He defends a law as necessary to ensure fairness for female athletes participating in sports. Today, President Biden issued a proclamation urging the U.S. Congress to shield LGBTQ people from discrimination. This is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
There could be a chain of electric vehicle chargers along the rail belt by 2020. The Alaska Energy Authority is building out its plan to make the 600-mile stretch of highway friendlier to electric vehicles. But advocates say the state needs to change regulations before that plan is feasible. This May, a coalition of rail belt utilities proposed that some of those changes could be taken up by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, the body that manages public utilities in the state. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has this report.
The Alaska Energy Authority wants to line the rail belt with fast chargers, which can charge some cars in under an hour. The problem is, those faster chargers consume large amounts of electricity for short, intermittent bursts of time. That means a business hosting a charging station may have to pay a high demand charge. And the businesses might not bring in many sales to balance those costs, at least in the beginning. Michelle Wilbur, with the Alaska Center for Energy and Power, is part of the Alaska Electric Vehicle Working Group.
Any public charging station isn't going to be used very often right now, and it's sort of a chicken or the egg problem. Without the publicly available charging, then less people buy vehicles because they're worried about running out of range to, you know, do a long drive or get to work or do a road trip.
That's going to be really expensive for the businesses operating the stations. The Alaska Energy Authority is paying some station installation and maintenance costs with money from a 2017 Volkswagen settlement. But businesses have to pay for their own electricity.
That's not really tenable as far as somebody owning or the station and paying for those electricity costs.
The Alaska Energy Authority has already received a lot of interest from potential site hosts along the rail belt. Wilbur thinks that's because they anticipate the regulations will change. The utilities proposed a new rate design that would remove that high demand charge, at least for the first few years of operation. Each utility will have a little bit of wiggle room to determine its own rates. Wilbur says she doesn't think utility members will see much change in their rates. She says the idea is that ratepayers would eventually pay less as utilities sell more electricity to charger site hosts. The other change the utilities are proposing is to explicitly allow site hosts to charge drivers for electricity. Currently, public utilities are the only entities allowed to sell electricity to several different customers. The workaround from charging site hosts has been to charge by the amount of time.
For instance, there is a level 2 charging station at the Rustic Goat here in Anchorage, and I believe they charge $1.75 an hour or any portion of an hour.
But Wilbur says different vehicles charge at different rates, and charging is slower when more of the vehicle is already charged up. The utilities want to clarify that charging site hosts don't have to be public utilities themselves to sell electricity. That way they can charge electric vehicle drivers for the electricity directly. The Regulatory Commission of Alaska has received the docket of proposed changes and is now accepting public comment. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Sabine Pooks.
A National Guard helicopter rescued two New York pilots early yesterday morning after their small plane crashed high in the Wrangell-St. Elias National Park. James Fiola and Fred Northrup, both 62 years old, survived a frigid couple of days on a glacier after their Cessna 182 crashed near a peak called Mount Hawkins. It took that long for rescuers to reach them in the bad weather, and family members were losing hope as they learned of the last message sent through the men's satellite communication device. Northrup's wife, Ann, describes their rescue as a miracle.
I was preparing my family for the worst. His last communication through the Garmin was, "Send rescue now. We will not make it through the night."
The two men had flown across the country on a recreational trip that Ann Northrup described as her husband's lifetime dream. After some flight seeing near Denali, they took off Saturday morning from Talkeetna on a 400-mile flight to Yakutat. Northrup says the last thing her husband remembered was a rapid loss of altitude. Then, she says, he came to.
I was preparing my family for the worst. His last communication through the Garmin was, "Send rescue now. We will not make it through the night."
The two men. Authorities asked for help from a local lodge owner and pilot who tried to find the men with his own small plane, but the weather made that impossible. A military C-130 plane and a Pave Hawk helicopter made several unsuccessful attempts to get to the crash site in the afternoon and evening. Ann Northrup says her husband, an experienced outdoorsman, could find their tent, but not the tent poles, so he tied the shelter to the side of the crashed plane. They could see their sleeping bags just 50 feet from the plane, but couldn't get to them in the deep snow. Their clothes were wet, too, but they put on all their layers and got inside. Finally, at around 2 a.m. Monday morning, rescuers were able to reach the men and reported to the National Park Service that they were cold but had only minor injuries. Ann Northrup said she's immensely grateful.
They worked tirelessly and were 24 hours a day with teams of people switching off and just reassuring us that they were doing everything within their power to rescue them.
Park Service officials say they're still working to rescue another group stranded on a different peak within the park. A group of three climbers was trying to summit 16,000-foot Mount Bona. The Park Service says two of them are suffering from altitude sickness and a third has cold-related injuries. They're waiting for a rescue on a glacier at about 10,000 feet, but the weather has so far thwarted a pickup. Albert Kukesh died last week. The 17-year-old Tlingit leader was an indigenous rights advocate, culture bearer, politician, and basketball player. His death is reverberating across the state and his home region of southeast Alaska. Alaska Public Media's Nat Herz has this remembrance.
Al Kukesh was fighting prostate cancer, and eventually he made the decision to leave the hospital and return to his home village of Angoon on the west coast of Admiralty Island. With his health failing, Kukesh made it known that people were invited to visit, and Rosita Worrell, a longtime friend and colleague, says they came in droves to a town that's only accessible by float plane or boat.
I was told in one day there was 13 flights that came in. And, you know, I ended up having to get a boat to go over there because I couldn't get a reservation on the plane.
Kukesh's friends describe him as a man of the people. He ran a lodge in Angoon, served a combined 16 years in the State House and Senate, advised two governors, chaired the Alaska Federation of Natives, and served for decades on the board of Sea Alaska, Southeast Alaska's regional Native corporation. But Kukesh was first known 50 years ago as a college basketball player at Alaska Methodist University in Anchorage, where he made up for his small size with quickness and hustle. Former Representative Reggie Jewell says Kukesh was still serious about hoops in the late 1990s when they served in the state house together.
Albert would go into the gym every single day, and he would shoot at least 500 shots. Albert, once he decided to take something on, he didn't do it halfway.
Kukesh was long involved with the Alaska Native Brotherhood, which fought for civil rights and native land claims. But he had to push his way into Sea Alaska 4 years after its founding as part of a slate of dissident candidates who called themselves Operation David and Goliath because they were challenging the existing board. Kukesh kept his seat without a break for 45 years. He worked with other Sea Alaska leaders to establish new benefits for elders and to grant new shares to Indigenous people who were born too late to qualify under the original terms of the 1971 Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Here's Joe Nelson, the current chair of Sea Alaska's board.
What he brought was a constant finger on the pulse of the people, because these are things we had to take to the people to get on a ballot and move.
Kukesh was also a longtime advocate for Alaska Native subsistence rights, both with AFN and personally. In 2009, he was ticketed along with other Angoon fishermen for catching more salmon than their state permits allowed. They appealed the charges all the way to the Alaska Supreme Court, which overturned them 6 years later. He later told scholars that he did it to challenge the premise that a 15 fish per family limit was enough to keep them fed through winter. Later in life, Kukesh also became a more active culture bearer, passing on Tlingit stories and traditions.
Hello, my name is Albert Kukesh. I want to tell a story that if my uncles were here, they would tell you it this way.
This is from a parable Kukesh recorded for Sea Alaska's cultural arm last year, which describes a nephew who follows his uncle's instructions, clambering over streams and through thorny Devil's Club to find a rock at the top of a mountain and turn it over.
That time that you spend from when you start at the bottom to get to the top of that mountain is your life. What's under that rock when you get to the top of the mountain next time will be all of the things you do during your lifetime. The Tlingit names you get, the stories you learn, the dances you dance.
Sea Alaska collected a number of Kukesh's stories so that they'll live on. Another way he will live on is through his Tlingit name, which Kukesh began the process of passing on to a Sea Alaska leader in one of several ceremonies just before his death. Kukesh is survived by his wife, Sally, five children, and numerous grandchildren. In Juneau, I'm Nat Herz.
For years, a small American flag was all that marked the grave of George Fox. Now his resting place will finally be recognized. KNBA's Trip Krause learns more about the Unalaska soldier killed during World War II.
Every year, Anunga elder Gertrude Savarni visits the Russian Orthodox Cemetery in Unalaska and puts a tiny U.S. flag on an unmarked grave. The grave is for her childhood friend, George Fox, who died during World War II.
It is very powerful that Gertrude Savarni remembered him and has taken the time to honor him every Memorial Day to go up to his gravesite and to place the United States flag on his grave.
That's Michael Livingston, a cultural heritage specialist with the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association. Livingston worked with others to get a grave marker for the World War II soldier.
Here we are about 77 years later, and he hasn't... His sacrifice was basically gone, almost gone. You know, had it not been for Gertrude Savarni, he would have been completely forgotten.
Fox was born in 1920 on Unga Island, off the Alaska Peninsula, about 250 miles northeast of Unalaska. He joined the U.S. Army in January of 1941 and served in the military police during World War II. The German occupation of Rome began in September 1943, and Allied forces led an offensive campaign that would eventually capture the Italian city. Fox was killed in action in Ardea, Rome, Italy, just 3 days before the American forces took possession of the city on June 4, 1944. He's the only known Aleut Anunga soldier killed in action during World War II. When Fox's body returned to Unalaska, Livingston said his funeral service was at the Russian Orthodox Church, but he never received a marker. Fox's grave has been unmarked for more than 70 years, and his name is missing from World War II killed in action memorials in Alaska.
We really don't know why his grave was not marked. Times were different back in the 1940s. There was basically open-faced racism against people of color, including soldiers of color. And so that might have been a play in it, too.
Livingston and others worked for at least 5 years to get Fox a marker. They managed to get some records from the National Archives and applied for one.
And we submitted many requests to different federal agencies asking for George Fox's military records, and we'd never hear anything back on those requests. And we were just spinning our wheels. And finally, we were able to enlist the help of United States Senator Dan Sullivan. And since Senator Sullivan's office got involved and has helped us in the project, we have finally able to get some resolution from the Veterans Affairs.
This May, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs approved the order of a gravestone for Fox.
We're just grateful that the stone is being ordered and that hopefully it'll arrive in Alaska soon.
Livingston estimates the stone will arrive about mid-July, and so this will likely be the last Memorial Day without a marker for George Fox's grave, besides a small U.S. flag from a friend. In Anchorage, I'm Trip Krause.
On Friday morning, the U.S. Senate blocked a bill that would have established a commission to investigate the January 6 assault on the Capitol. As Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports, Senator Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan split their votes.
Murkowski was one of only six Republicans who voted to move ahead with the commission.
Truth is hard stuff, but we've got a responsibility to it.
Sponsors needed 60 votes. They got 54, so the bill died by filibuster. Senator Sullivan, like a majority of Republicans, voted no. In a 10-minute hallway interview Thursday night, when the outcome was all but certain, Murkowski said she was disappointed. She criticized positions other Republicans took to minimize the attack, as well as their arguments for not establishing an independent commission. She says the attack was an attempt to weaken American democracy.
And so we just can't pretend that nothing bad happened or that people just got too excitable. Something bad happened, and it's important to lay that out.
Reporters asked her about Minority Leader Mitch McConnell's comments that the commission and renewed scrutiny of former President Trump's role could hurt Republicans in the 2022 election. Murkowski says that's short-term politics. She says there are principles at stake, like abiding by election results and the peaceful transfer of power.
I kind of want that to endure beyond just one election cycle.
Murkowski met Thursday with the mother and girlfriend of Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick. He battled extremists on January 6 and died the next day. Murkowski says she started the meeting by telling his loved ones she was sad that they had to make the rounds of Senate offices to urge Republicans to vote for a commission.
I am heartsick that you feel that you need to come and advocate to members of Congress that we stand up and say the truth is hard, but the truth is necessary.
Senator Sullivan's spokesman says a scheduling conflict prevented Sullivan from meeting with Sicknick survivors. In a written statement, Sullivan condemned the violence on January 6. He noted that two Senate committees are investigating it, so he doesn't believe a commission is necessary. And his statement says, a commission risks further dividing Americans when we need to come together. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
This is Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Fish farts give clues to where they are and what they're doing. More after this.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute provides digital and print marketing materials to the Alaska seafood industry. Find thousands of stunning photos, high-quality video footage, and sales tools at alaskaseafood.org.
Fish Radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, online at alaskaboat.com.
Researchers are hoping to better understand fish distributions by recording the sounds they make. Many fish make identifiable sounds, and it offers potential for research and management. The most recent sound discovered, fish farts. According to Science Shot, a service of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, a team from the University of South Florida picked up the barely audible cricket-like noises using a robot called a glider that sampled ocean sounds in Tampa Bay. The sounds lasted throughout the day and night and were most likely groups of menhaden and herring releasing gas from their swim bladders. Of the 30,000 fish species in the world oceans, researchers believe fewer than 1,000 have been recorded. They know that the tiny cusk eel can sound like a jackhammer, and for years the mating calls of codfish have wreaked havoc for the Norwegian Navy because the love sounds are similar to enemy submarines. Here's the mating call of black drum. Another disturber of the peace, a midshipman fish guarding its nest. By mapping these sounds, the researchers hope to get a better picture of species distributions and likely spawning areas. Scientists believe the underwater soundscape can tell a lot about what's out there and what they're doing. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods, who salutes and says thanks to the men and women fishing across Alaska for their hard work and dedication. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
The Kodiak Airport Rehabilitation Project team will host a virtual public meeting to provide an update on the project and solicit input for the environmental assessment. The meeting will be accessible online or by phone on Wednesday, June 2nd, from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. via WebEx. The meeting will include a presentation at 4:15 p.m., followed by a Q&A session. To access the meeting login information, please visit the project website at kodiakairportrehab.com. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
Good afternoon. Welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the first day of June, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 5:19. It will set again at 10:58, giving us 17 hours and 40 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 2 minutes and 40 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this day was 67, set in 1984, and our record low was 33, set in 1968. Currently 50 degrees here in Kodiak. It's been a pretty pleasant day. We're looking for more rain this afternoon, though, mainly before 1. Mostly cloudy skies tonight, and a little more rain after 7 p.m. Low around 45 tonight is all. East wind at 10 miles per hour. For tomorrow, rain before 1, then scattered showers, mainly between 1 and 4. Cloudy skies after that with a high near 51 tomorrow. Northeast wind at 10 miles per hour should shift to the north in the morning. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up here on the east side at 1:50 p.m., and that is going to be a 0-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 8:46 p.m. of 6.66 feet. Man. Your next low tide will be at 2:15 a.m. and be 3.1 feet, and your high tide for tomorrow morning here on the east side will be at 8:03 a.m. and be 6.8 feet. Over on the west side, these are Uganic Pass tides. You have a low tide coming up at 2:16 p.m. of 0.7 feet, followed by a high tide at 8:57 p.m. of 12.5 feet. Your low tide for the middle of the night on the west side will occur at 2:55 a.m. and be 4.2 feet. And your high tide for tomorrow morning will be at 8:44 a.m. and be 11.3 feet. Mariners, here's your weather synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A 991 millibar North Pacific low will move to 290 nautical miles southeast of Kodiak City and go to 1,000 millibars on Wednesday afternoon, then weaken Thursday morning. Its front will move across the Gulf Wednesday and move inland Thursday morning. Your resulting weather, Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. Small craft advisory through tonight with south winds to 20 knots and seas to 8 feet. For tonight, east winds to 15 knots and seas to 8 feet. For tomorrow, northeast winds to 15 knots and seas to 7 feet. Over on our west side in the Shelikof Strait, southeast winds to 15 knots right now and seas to 3 feet. For tomorrow, look for northeast wind to 15 knots and seas to 4 feet. For inside waters, Chiniak and Marmot Bays, Chiniak Bay, south winds to 20 knots right now and seas to 4 feet. For tomorrow, west winds to 10 knots, seas to 3 feet. Up in Marmot Bay, southeast 20 right now, seas to 4 feet. And for tomorrow, look for northeast 10, seas to 3 feet. Meetings coming up. The Assembly is having a special work session tonight. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Bayside Volunteer Fire Station. On the agenda, the borough budget. Also tonight, the Women's Bay Service Area regular board meeting is happening at the Women's Bay Fire Hall. That's happening at 5:30 p.m. On Thursday, the Local Emergency Planning Committee is having their quarterly meeting. That's happening at 11 a.m. in the Assembly Chambers. Also on Thursday, the Borough Assembly is having their regular meeting at 6:30 p.m. at Bayside Fire Hall. The Parks and Recreation Advisory Board will hold a meeting on Tuesday. That's today. Oh, that already happened at 12 p.m. at the Baranoff Park, going on right now. It's open to the public. And if you want to call them in the middle of the meeting, dial 486-8670. CANA, Alaska Sea Grant, and the Shunack Tribe of Kodiak strongly advise against eating personally harvested shellfish in the Kodiak region at this time. They're currently seeing elevated levels of toxins. PSP, or paralytic shellfish poisoning, increased dramatically in the summer months and remained through the fall in the Kodiak region. This is due to naturally occurring toxic phytoplankton that bloom in warm water. All bivalve shellfish, including clams, cockles, and mussels, as well as predatory snails and the digestive tissues of crab, can accumulate PSP toxins. People are at risk from eating personally harvested, untested shellfish. Please remember that these toxins cannot be removed by cooking, freezing, or soaking the shellfish, and early symptoms include tingling, numbness, and nausea, can progress rapidly to respiratory distress. If you have any symptoms after eating untested shellfish, call 911 or go to your local clinic immediately. And of course, commercially harvested shellfish is regulated and safe for consumption. For more information, contact Grace at 486-1360 or Julie at 486-1514.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.